Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. If you're walking around Harvard Square and you turn down Garden Street, you'll pass an attractive stone building on your right. You'd be forgiven for thinking it was just another part of the Harvard campus, but you'd be wrong. It's actually the campus of the Longy School of Music, and it's been around for nearly a century. Harvard's shadow may have always loomed large over Longy's campus, but that's not the only identity issue Longy is having lately. Longy is deep in a union battle with its faculty, and the school is also exploring the idea of a makeover. Here to explain all of this is Boston Globe arts reporter Jeff Edgers, who's been following the Longy School news and who often joins us on Thursdays to talk about the arts. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Sasha. How you doing?
I'm good. So, Jeff, for people who haven't been reading your stories, give us the Cliff Notes version on what's going on labor-wise over at the Longy School.
Well, I mean, basically, the faculty there, and it's all part-time folks, have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board because of the school's reorganization plans. And those reorganization plans really simply involve cutting a few staff people, shifting people around, reducing hours, and just making changes there. The faculty folks who formed a union believe that it's illegal for them to make those changes without negotiating with them properly.
And were these changes made, these hour reductions, these layoffs, because of financial problems at the school?
Well, the school, it seems as if right now it's on sound financial footing, but when the current president arrived there 3 years ago, they had a $1 million deficit, and she saw a need to change the way things were done over there. It's a challenging school to be at. I mean, it's got a rich history. You know, it's almost 100 years old, but it really is in the shadow of, you know, NEC, New England Conservatory, and the Boston Conservatory. Those schools have roughly, you know, say 700 students each. Longy has about 50 undergrads and 170 graduate students.
So this is quite a small school.
It is. I mean, and the bulk of what they do, or a lot of what they do, are these community students, which are basically people like you and me, who, but maybe better musicians, who want to take a harpsichord class, or you know, and they come in once a week and study with these faculty members.
One of the things you've written about, Jeff, is that one solution could be that Bard College in New York might acquire Longy, and this would be a way of possibly trying to save the school. But, you know, one of the things we want to talk to you about is, as you mentioned, we've got New England Conservatory, we've got Boston Conservatory, we've got Berkeley, we've got major music departments at most of the big colleges. You know, we wonder, where does Longy fit in here? I mean, is there an argument that Boston has a glut of music schools? And how do we sort of, how do we rank Longy, and how do we evaluate its future in that sense?
Well, we've got a lot of schools, period. I mean, it's, you know, I'd imagine that if you were at BU and they said, hey, you already got Tufts, BC, why do we need you? They would say, well, people are applying and they want to study here. You know, I think what they're trying to do by creating this satellite campus of Bard, which is a school that's very ambitious, has campuses abroad, is to create a specialty, this master's in teaching program, that would help create something that would help define it better. And that's different, I think.
Sure. Jeff, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this is that Adam Ragusea, who's a familiar name to many people who listen to BUR and Radio Boston, he's a reporter and producer here. Many people may not know, if they haven't read his website, on his bio on our website, that Adam was an undergraduate major in composing. He even studied composing in grad school. And I'm just going to let Adam talk a little bit about his story, because he really has an interesting viewpoint on this Longy situation. So Adam's here with me in the studio. Adam, tell us about your musical past pre-public radio.
Oh, it's so funny. Okay, so yes, I was formerly, in a former life, I wrote some schlocky, you know, world music-inspired stuff that I'm pretty sure I could have sold on, like, the Wyndham Hill New Age label if it had not also been so pretentious at the same time. And we have a clip.
That is the composition work of Adam Ragusea in a previous life before WBUR.
You're welcome. So, I mean, I guess, like you were saying, I mean, it's kind of hard to imagine that there is a pipeline of students, of applicants to fill the all the numerous voluminous music schools there in Boston. But I was one of those kids when I was in high school. I applied to New England Conservatory as an undergrad, and I got in. I ended up going elsewhere. I ended up going to the Eastman School in New York State. But I actually ended up abandoning music altogether because I just felt that the classical music market from the schools to the stage was totally oversupplied.
So, Jeff, weigh in for us on that. I mean, the issue...
I think it's a pretty good record. I mean, I have most of Adam's... That's a bootleg, though, right?
That's right, exactly.
I just downloaded that.
That was live in Copenhagen, man. You know, I don't know who recorded that.
I'm sorry, Sasha.
So we want you to philosophize for us, Jeff, on how we deal with the reality that there's certainly, you know, if someone wants to go to music school, let them go to music school. But we have so many in Boston. What do you do about the Adams in the world who they want to practice, they want to make a living doing it, they come out, they think, maybe I can't make a living doing it?
Well, you know, the problem is art is very complicated, and we don't know when people develop as musicians, whether they're 5 or 15 or 25. And, you know, I'd hate to think that you'd say, oh, let's close the school and, you know, there aren't that many, you know, they're having problems, they're in the shadow of this. And then someone like Elliot Carter, who's, you know, one of Longy's famous graduates, what if he didn't stick with music somehow or left or, you know, did something else? So... it's a very difficult thing. It's, you know, it's the same way in writing. I mean, how can you know when somebody's going to blossom and when somebody's not going to?
Well, that's all well and good, Jeff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all well and good. Come on. But like, you know, the day I quit music school was after, well, I decided to quit music school was the day that like, it was my second year of graduate program. There had been a composer in the program who was just brilliant, a genius. She was the top person, and she graduated just as I got there. And I walked into my bagel shop, and she, like, there she was, like, smearing my bagel for me. And I walked into my advisor's office, and I said, I literally said this to my advisor. I said, I think you're running a pyramid scheme here, you know.
Well, Adam, do you miss music at all? I mean, you know, all joking aside, there aren't many people who can actually record and compose something like you did, even if you're making fun of it.
Sure, but
don't you miss that at all?
I do, but I think, you know, and this is just my personal experience here, is that I sort of felt like, you know, I went to BU's Tanglewood program when I was 17. At that point, you know, when you're a teenager, music and the arts are so powerful for you. They move you so deeply, and that was such an incredible summer for me, but it was a great recruiting drive for BU too. And I think almost, whether intentionally or not, the system and the abundance of music education out there ends up kind of exploiting the attraction that young people have to the arts. Because I'm not as moved by music at 28 as I was when I was 17.
Well, I'm not a dream killer, Adam. I'm sorry to say. And I think if you want to become a stockbroker, you can do that at 30. If you've got a potential gift and you're inspired, you should do it. I'm not saying that you should have, you know, loans till the time you're 80 years old to do it, but I think you should pursue that. It's admirable to actually take a chance like that. That said, I've completely quit music.
And Jeff, we are going to keep following your reporting to find out whether Longy survives and more students who dream and want to study music can keep studying it at Longy. So we're going to follow that reporting. But while we still have you, we always want to hear about your weekend arts picks. So we want to know what's on tap for you this weekend and what you recommend other people consider going and seeing or doing.
Well, I kind of I like the idea. I don't really understand what the record is, but the Pops is going to be holding this attempt on Saturday to set the record for the largest group of holiday carolers. They're going to do that over at the Prudential Center. Again, I don't know how many you have to get, but I think a lot. And they will have free hot chocolate, and that is the clincher for me, probably.
It's in the five figures, isn't it?
Really? Well, you know what? You're the music school guy.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Well, no, it calls to mind, I think there was... There was like a 100,000 violinist thing at the turn of the century in New York, where that theoretically happened, but I think it was Strauss.
So people can
organized.
Go to the Pru, was it, to see people break the world record of a holiday caroling?
They
or,
could
or,
they,
help.
Or participate.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to start sharp 12:30. Okay,
and that's 12:30 on what day, Jeff?
On Saturday. Yeah.
All right. Let me pivot over to Adam. Adam, what's on your schedule for this weekend?
Definitely Slutcracker, which actually opens for the season tomorrow night. People might have this is the burlesque version of the Nutcracker, which
at the Somerville Theater in Davis Square.
Really, really great show. It's great that they're bringing it back again. And actually, the cool thing they're doing is they're taking it on the road for the first time this year because it's going to Montreal.
I saw this two seasons ago. It had some of the most athletic pole dancing I've ever seen in my life.
Indeed,
Jeff,
and,
have you seen
tasteful.
This?
No, you know what? I'm not old enough.
Yeah, it is. Well, it is slightly PG-13.
But I've heard great things about it.
And then, Adam, anything else?
Well, speaking of Montreal, last time I was up in Montreal, I turned on my television and I saw these young gentlemen rapping in French. And it's a group called Radio Radio. And they have they rap in a dialect of Acadian French called Chiac, which is a mixture of this kind of Acadian French, which involves all this archaic maritime terminology from old France.
And
with English. Yeah, exactly. And this is what you're hearing right now, with like mostly pop culture English. So they just have a new record out that I've just been listening to, and you should go listen to it. The problem is that it's really hard to find it because on iTunes there are these national boundaries, right, Jeff? Like where it's hard to get into the Canada site on iTunes.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to kind of find a back way into it. But they're called Radio Radio, and they're definitely worth checking out.
And Jeff, anything else you want to mention?
You know, I'm halfway through this Keith Richards book. I don't know if you've heard of this book. It's enormously entertaining. It's like... It makes Fear and Loathing look like the picture Bible. I mean, it's insane, and I just love it. So I've been reading that, all about the intense amount of drugs that he would stuff in his cars. He's calling Mick Jagger Brenda. I enjoy that as well. And there is, if you actually love music, there's a lot of interesting descriptions of how he gets the kind of sound and tunings and atmosphere to create the great music that they made before, say, like 1974.
So this is a recommend read from you.
Yeah, really. I never thought Keith could write, and I'm actually not sure he still can, but he can ghostwrite.
Jeff Edgers, arts reporter for the Boston Globe, thank you very much once again for talking with us.
Thank you.
And WBUR's very own Adam Ragusa here in the studio, thank you very much for telling us about your pre-BUR life.
I'll sing for you later.